From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm David Andrietta, in for Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made every 10 years in the United States, when governments from the top down, federal to state to county, set about redrawing electoral district boundaries in response to shifts in population accounted for in the census. The process is called redistricting, and look, it's not the sexiest topic, but it is an important one because it determines how you're represented in the seat of your government, whether that be in Washington, Albany, or Rochester in the case of Monroe County. Talk of redistricting often sparks discussions in legislatures around the country about fairness and alternatives to the process. You'll often hear one side of the aisle talk about an independent redistricting commission. The most common criticism? Redrawing electoral districts is a political parlor game in which incumbent lawmakers carve up turf to suit their interests, those interests being namely their prospects for re-election. In this hour, we explore the nuts and bolts of redistricting in Monroe County because, as has happened every year on the ones, 1991, 2001, 2011, and as we move toward 2021, a fight is a-brewing. Joining me today are two county legislators on the same side of the aisle, but on different sides of the redistricting debate as it's shaping up in Monroe County. It is my pleasure to have on the program the legislature's minority leader, Vincent Felder, a Democrat who represents the 22nd District in Northeast Rochester, including the Upper Falls and Market View Heights neighborhoods, and legislator Rachel Barnhart, a fellow Democrat who's right next door in the 21st District, representing Beechwood and North Winton Village, among other slices of neighborhoods. Legislator Felder, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Legislator Barnhart, I am grateful for your time.
Hi, Vince. Hi, David. Thank you.
And to lend some historical perspective to our discussion, we also have joining us Catherine Smith. She's the past president of the Women League of Women Voters in the Rochester metropolitan area, a group that has been very active here and elsewhere on redistricting proposals. Catherine, thank you for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Now, look, I want to say at the outset of the discussion that you may have heard here on WXXI or read in City or the Democrat and Chronicle that two of our guests today, the legislators, Legislator Felder and Barnhart, are at odds over a matter that has divided Democrats in the county legislature, and that is the matter of the confirmation of a Democratic County Elections Commissioner. Both have been strong voices for their causes. A lot of ink has been spilled on the issue, and the intention here today is not to have a drag-down knockout brawl over that matter. We're here to talk about redistricting. But I would be remiss in my journalistic responsibilities if I didn't address the elephant in the room of the Elections Commissioner dispute, so I want to ask one question of my guests on that before we move on. And first, some context. Where the matter stands right now is that the Republican majority, joined by five Democrats, including Legislator Felder, elected to not vote to install an elections commissioner certified by the Monroe County Democratic Committee because, as has been explained, that faction the Republicans and the Democrats believed that a state judge had precluded the legislature from acting. The judge, John Ark, has since said that he did no such thing and that the legislature could act. His interpretation of the timeline was that the legislature had until August 26th to confirm the recommended elections commissioner, in this case, that city councilwoman Jackie Ortiz. So the question is a two-parter for you, Minority Leader Felder. Do you foresee the legislature taking up a vote on installing Ms. Ortiz before August 26th? And if not, why not? Legislator Felder, are you with us?
My phone was on mute.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Did you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Did you hear the question, legislator?
Yes, I did. My phone was on mute. I'll just say this much. When the judge said that he did not stop the legislation from acting, that's not true on June 2nd when he signed the order to show cause that has the net effect of issuing an injunction against the legislature. So he said something different on Friday, and that, it is what it is. I have no answer for you. There's no answer I can give you on the question of if it's going to be taken up.
Okay, so you and the people that you're aligned with on this matter and your lawyers believe that that the judge has precluded you from taking action.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Well, and the fact is, the judge is still not ruling any of the essential motions for the case. Okay. So,
Ms. Barnes,
he's moving in another direction, but I really don't want to discuss that today. No. I think we can discuss redistricting. We don't have that much time.
We are here to discuss redistricting. It's the elephant in the room, and I hope you understand why I had to ask, and I appreciate you taking it. And just a follow up question then for Ms. Barnhart, is there a next step then for the legislators who would like to see the elections commissioner voted on at this point?
Well, I would say that I'm also not interested in going down this rabbit hole, and I do suspect that throughout this hour, the minority leader and I will agree far more than we will disagree on principles involving redistricting. On the issue of the elections commissioner, I don't agree with his interpretation, and I believe the next step will be that the Democratic caucus on August 27th will be voting to appoint Jackie Ortiz, who won an election. I believe that is the next step. I'm very sad about all of this, and I hope that we can move forward in unity at some point.
Well, on that note, let's move forward here with our discussion this hour. And I do appreciate you both taking that question and being on the same panel. You know, sometimes with talk shows like this that seek to have a conversation and an open debate, open discourse, it's sometimes difficult to get people who don't align on some of the issues to sit at the same table. And even though we're not physically sitting at the same table, we're doing the next best thing. And I really appreciate you both for being here and sharing your thoughts. So thank you. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's get down to redistricting. And I want to start with baby steps here, because most people don't really understand the specifics of redistricting. So what is the current method for redrawing legislative lines that's laid out in the Monroe County Charter? Which of you would like to take that? Which, Legislator Felder or Legislator Barnhart?
Well, the current process is they are what they call a redistricting commission. It's made up of the Democrat, Republican, election commissioners, the legislature minority leader, legislature majority leader, and the president. And okay. They propose the line to the legislature.
Right. And that's a five-panel commission, if you will. How long does the process generally take, Vince? And what does the process involve?
Well, the first thing we have to do, we have to get the data. You know, the census, we don't know if it's going to be on time or late. I think they're trying to rush it now, but our original thought was going to be late, because normally we don't get that information until the second quarter.
Right.
And late in the first quarter, the second quarter of the year. And you know, with the primaries being moved and petitioning starting in February now, there's almost going to be no way to do it before the next election in 2021. And so once we get the data goes to the state, and then the state sends out their redistricting data, and then it comes to the county.
And that's when the commission, this five-panel commission, looks at it.
And examines it. I would imagine there may be some meetings before that preliminarily, but until you have the data and the lines, you know, the data for the census tracts and whatever population shifts have taken place, there's nothing you can do.
Sure. So let's review. Back in 2011, the political calendar looked different than it does today, and so we'll discuss that later on. But essentially, the census data from 2010 rolled in at some point in 2011, and it was able to align with the political calendar that year. So what you're saying, if I'm understanding correctly, and I believe this to be true because I've looked at I was reporting on it at the time, but the lines were redrawn in 2011, and the elections that year sort of went off without a hitch. Is that fair to say?
Yes, as far as I know. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
So we've got this five-member commission made up of the two county elections commissioners, and we should say that in New York State, boards of elections, county boards of elections are co-chaired by a Republican and a Democratic commissioner. Those two people are on the board, the president of this commission, the president of the county legislature, and then one person who's elected by their caucuses within the county legislature. So typically you'll have It'll be weighted one way or the other. In this case, it would be weighted toward the Republicans because the Republicans hold the majority, so the president would be sort of that deciding vote. County Executive Adam Bello has proposed legislation to amend the county charter to create what he's calling an independent redistricting commission. Legislator Barnhart, you, I believe, are in support of this measure. Can you tell us a little bit about exactly what it entails?
Sure. The county executive has introduced legislation that would create an independent redistricting commission. I have it in front of me, and I can list off who would be on this commission. It would essentially preclude elected officials, party officials, lobbyists, relatives from serving on the commission that would draw the lines. And the idea here is to make this nonpartisan. And so this commission would come up with maps. It would go to the legislature. The legislature would have a certain amount of time to either vote it up or down, and then it would have to send it back. If it votes it down, the commission could then send new lines to the legislature. The legislature, again, could vote it up or not down. Ultimately, though, the legislature would be able to draw its own lines if it didn't like what the redistricting commission did. However, you would assume by that point there would be a tremendous amount of public scrutiny involved. I will say I do support the county executive's referral. I support it because I don't believe that politicians should be able to pick their own voters and draw their own lines. And I think it puts some accountability into the process. However, the Republicans do have the majority. They have declared it dead on arrival. And I think that no matter what process we use, we can agree, and I'm hoping both sides of this can agree, that to some principles. You know, you want fair maps, but fair maps look different to everyone, okay? Your fair map might not be my fair map. But I believe that neighborhoods and towns, we should try to hold them together to the extent possible. We should acknowledge that demographic representation is important. For me, I really hope the city is represented. I wouldn't want to see city districts carved up. I don't think that either party should be able to manipulate lines to their benefit. And I also, you know, think we have to guard against being able to retaliate against perceived enemies, which, you know, that happens. And it's known to happen throughout history, the history of the United States during redistricting. And so what we want to prevent is what's called gerrymandering, and that is manipulating lines for political benefit. And you have to acknowledge off the bat, everybody walks in the room with a self-interest, everybody.
Sure.
And so you have a process that limits those interests and checks those interests. We will have some population shifts. I think we will. The city definitely lost some population at a faster rate than the suburbs did. And we do know that because of the American Community Survey. So there will have to be some shifts, and it's really my hope I've never gone through this process personally before. I've only reported on it like you, but I do hope that the Democrats and Republicans can come together and make lines and that makes sense.
So you mentioned, Rachel, that the Republicans have declared it dead on arrival, and actually I think that was the language that Majority Leader Steve Brew actually used, DOA. He was invited to be on the show, but he declined. The majority issued a statement when County Executive Bello introduced his legislation, calling it a, quote, a bald-faced, politically motivated power grab disguised as good government. He's stacking the deck for Democrats to take control. Please tell us how you really feel, legislator. Legislator Felder, you've said publicly that you're not inclined to support this legislation. You're a Democrat. If this indeed is stacking the deck for Democrats, as the Republican majority alleges, why not take advantage of it? What makes it a bad idea?
I think my biggest issue with it is the first thing is that I think it was disrespectful for the county executive to send out a press release before he spoke to either the minority, excuse me, usually the majority leader and myself about it. You know, we could have had a discussion. You know, I'm not completely against the idea of independent, just people at least being able to make, to give advice or make suggestions. But the way I read that legislation was that it basically removes the legislature from the process. And that's a problem. Because at the end of the day, the legislators are the voters who are the ones who are accountable to the voters.
Well, just
and should have a good idea of what our districts are and should look like.
Okay,
because we're in them.
And we
deal with the people who are in the district.
So let's talk about what the what his proposal entails, because you're suggesting that it removes the legislature. And to some extent, I suppose it does, but it does allow for the majority leader and the minority leader, which is you, to make appointments to this board. So it would be an 8-member panel made up of the Republican and Democratic election commissioners. So there's two. Then 2 retired judges, one appointed by the majority leader and the other by the minority leader. That's 4. Now 2 people recommended by a, quote, publicly recognized organization committed to voters' rights, one named by the majority leader and another named by the minority leader. That's 6. And 2 representatives of, quote, a publicly recognized organization committed to the rights of racial or ethnic minorities, women, persons who identify as LGBTQ, or persons with disabilities, again, named by the majority leader and the minority leader. I want to understand, Minority Leader Felder, your opposition to this. It rests somewhat on principle, but also on the way that the message was delivered. I just want to understand that if the county executive had come to you and discussed it ahead of time, would you be more receptive to this?
Well, I think we probably would have made. I probably would have suggested a couple of adjustments to it. See, one of the issues is when you live in such a highly politicized society as we do, it's hard to find people who are really independent. And you know, well, even if they are not necessarily an elected official or a politician, that's one of the issues. And so, the other issue is
so even these judges and the people publicly recognized by a publicly recognized organization committed to voter rights, you suspect it could have political leanings. Of course,
they could still have political leanings, and people could still be picked on the basis that even though they belong to these kinds of organizations, still lean a certain way or have already been told or asked to look at things a certain way. The other issue, like I said, I have, when you take the legislature out of the picture of even looking at the joint of the lines, is that what you're doing is you're taking people looking at a map, and all they see is a map. And they may see things here and there. They don't understand the nuances or anything else in these districts. And so I think that, you know, if it having someone make strictly recommendations, that may be something I may be open to. But to actually have people saying, these are the lines, and then go straight from what they proposed to a referendum or whatever. That's the problem for me. So, like I said, if he had come and discussed it, it would have been a discussion worth having. You know, majority leader had just given me, I think, the Friday before, an opening proposal of what the majority wanted.
And you're referring to the legislation that would shift the terms? Are you referring to the legislation that would shift the terms?
It would do that would do both.
Okay. Well,
both of them do both. I think the one that the majority put together would shift the election to the 2-year term. So instead of the election next year being a 4-year election, it'd be from 2 years to 2023 and do another election in 2023.
Correct. And we'll
the
talk. Yeah.
As opposed to something different.
That's a lot to parse out. And I want to come back to that because I think you bring up a really good point. But I'd like to bring Catherine into the discussion here because she has some historical context. And let's rewind then to 2011. Catherine Smith, past president of the Rochester Area Chapter of the League of Women Voters, your organization conducted an interesting experiment that year as it pertains to redistricting. Can you bring us back to that? What was it? And take your time because this is an in-depth issue here. Can you review?
Thank you. In 2011, the local League of Women Voters hired the Center for Government Research to use the census data to draw proposed legislative lines for our county legislature. Their first map was drawn strictly with census data. So they took the total number of people in Monroe County, which was about 750,000, and divided it by the 29 districts, so about 25,000 people per legislative district. They did not have any information on voter registration numbers. They did not look at community of interest deliberately on this map. They also drew another map for us that I will discuss in a moment. So those lines were shown and compared to the map drawn by the legislature's panel and presented to the legislature. Then the Center for Government Research.
How was that received? How was that received, that map that was presented to the
legislature? Well, it was part of the report, and they did a second map. It was not public until the entire thing was done. I'm sorry.
I was explaining
in quite detail the process that the researchers at the center used.
Right. Oh, no, details are good. We want them. I just wanted to understand. Okay, terrific. So that was the first map. We're on to the second.
And the second map, they did put in information on what is referred to in this field of redistricting, reapportionment after census, communities of interest. So that would look at typical neighborhoods. It looks at minority groups. Of course, you have to follow the federal regulations regarding districts and representation. So we had those two maps, and we compared those two maps to the map drawn by the legislature.
And how did it differ?
The public was interested in whether that changes your majority, because as we know in Monroe County, the city districts have been recently, by recently I mean the last three decades or four decades, Democratic registration is more, and the suburbs it's Republican more. There was not a big change in that from any of the three maps that we presented to the public.
Was that a surprise to you, Catherine? That the map didn't change?
You know,
change?
I think it was a surprise to people in the public. I think they thought that if the maps were drawn strictly by data, researchers doing it without the registration of by party, a partisan map drawing. I do think that was somewhat of a surprise to the public. Yes.
Okay.
So the only thing that we saw in the report from the Center of Government Research that was interest to the League of Women Voters to follow up on was the fact of what you are called districts that tend to lean toward one party, and that's from, of course, election material results. They found only five districts where incumbents would be running against incumbents. And that is the factor that the League of Women looks at when they say that the map should be drawn for the interest of the community and not with a focus on incumbents being re-elected.
You know, what's interesting about County Executive Bello's proposal is that it is practically a carbon copy of a proposal made by then, I believe it was Minority Leader Vince Esposito in 2011 to do the exact same thing, an 8-member panel. It laid out the exact same way that County Executive Bello has laid out. And I remember him presenting that data, and I look back at some of the old news clips. Between 2001 and 2011, there had been 88 county legislature elections and only four incumbents unseated.
Correct.
Thoughts on that, Catherine?
Yes, correct. And it's a slogan that you hear often after the census is taken and the numbers come out and the many elected bodies that have to deal with lines for redistricting, is that you want to be sure that the voters have their representatives and that the representatives have not determined which voters will be electing them the next time.
So let's hold that thought while I take a very quick break. It's the only break for the hour, and we'll be back with more Connections in just a moment.
I'm Megan Mack. Coming up in our second hour, when we talk about COVID-19, we often use two categories, those who have died and those who have survived. But what about the group of survivors who are experiencing long-term impacts of the disease? Between heart issues, lung issues, and so-called brain fog, there are many unanswered questions that researchers are trying to understand. We talk with long-term COVID survivors and with doctors about what we know and what we don't know.
You're listening to Connections. I'm David Andrietta, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about redistricting, that process of redrawing electoral maps, specifically at the county level. And there is legislation on the table presented by introduced by County Executive Adam Bello to create what he's calling an independent redistricting commission. We have our guest legislator, Vince Felder, the minority leader, Democrat in the county legislature, and legislator Rachel Barnhart here. They're on the same side of the aisle, but on slightly different sides of the debate, but agreeing in principle on the idea of some independent redistricting commission. Is that fair to characterize your take on this, legislator Felder, that on the principles of it, you'd like to see some independence?
Well, I'm certainly open to the idea of having people make be able to look and make recommendations, but they should not be binding on the legislature. What I'm saying is, because at the end of the day, the legislature should know their districts. Now, there's some districts I can pick out a couple of them over in the Henrietta, Minden, Rush area over there, you know, and Pittsburgh, that area around there, and Greece.
Well, yeah.
Some of those areas have been really chopped up, and that, you know, it would be nice to clean up those lines.
On that note, I'm looking at a map. I'm looking at a map, Legislator Felder, right now of the 29 districts on the county website. And I'd like to pose this question to you and Legislator Barnhart. Are there any districts that look wonky to you? As Vince Esposito said in 2011, that looked like a dragon.
But like I said, you know, if you look at district, no, I don't want to start calling on district, but if you look at certain areas, you go on the map, you can see that they're, you know, they're almost like jigsaw puzzles. For example, District 29, Ernest Flagler Mitchell's district. He has this long district that goes all the way from Portland Avenue past Walmart, which is on Hudson Avenue, and from Northern Street all the way to 104. And then, and within that district, he has one district. It looks like it has maybe one. I can't even one like one or two houses in that inside that one district. He has this huge district, and then in the middle of that, he has this real tiny district. So like stuff like that, those things have to be cleaned up. You know, there obviously is a lot of places where on the map, if you can look, if you look at the map, that they districts seem kind of hinky. They come, you know, they've drawn too long. So some of those things need to be cleaned up. There's no question about that.
Legislator Barnhart, would you agree?
Well, it's obvious that this was a map that was drawn by Republicans in the early 2000s. They had the majority, and they still have the majority.
It is important to point out, I know we've been talking a lot about 2011, but you're right. These district lines generally trace back to 2001.
Yes, they don't look very different. You know, my district, I feel the neighborhoods are intact in my district, but you know, you go over to the Maplewood neighborhood where I grew up, it's divided among three different legislative districts. You know, that kind of thing, I agree with Vince. You know, let's take a look at that and see if we can provide better representation. I do want to I think the League of Women Voters does absolutely amazing work and has wonderful advocacy when it comes to these issues. I would though point out that a lot of times when you look at a map and you see really crazy looking shapes, you automatically could think, wow, this is a gerrymandered district. But you have to look a little deeper. What are the neighborhoods in that district? Perhaps all the neighborhoods are intact. Look at a district like the Assembly District 137th. That was specifically drawn so we could have Black representation in the state assembly. And the only way to do it was to go across the city. And that district persists to this day. That's a good thing. You know, there are a lot of different factors that go into these this map drawing. If you were to draw simply based on population without taking into consideration other factors like demographics, like neighborhood and town representation, like and even partisan, even party enrollment, you really have to look at it very holistically and do the best that you can, I think. And so, you know, I hope I can be at the table and provide input. I hope that everyone is included. I hope it's an inclusive process, and I look forward to working with people on figuring this out. But there's no question that we have one party that has the majority, and they're going to walk in with their interest. And there's no question we have a county executive who would love to, I'm sure, to pick up some Democratic seats. As do I, by the way. It's just, you just put, you know, the cards are on the table. I think we know what everybody wants. But I do think putting an accountability measure in there, having the League of Women Voters take a look at this and say, look, this map doesn't make a lot of sense to us. I think having those accountability measures, having that transparency, being able to defend the work product, I think is very important.
Would the League of Women Voters be open to something like that, Catherine?
What we have started to look at, we started in November, and of course the election commissioners we met with are not the election commissioners we have now. But we do a fairly extensive research on the last 10 years, and then what we see for this year, and then, of course, wait for the data from the census. We are really pushing, Dave. People need to fill out the census because if those numbers aren't accurate, that very much influences these districts, especially the more local you are, the more those numbers are going to influence you. So let me put in that pitch for the census. Then what we will do is we will continue our research on the district lines. What we would very much like is if there is an independent panel. And what we mean by independent is nonpartisan. We don't mean that it's not political, but we're referring to a nonpartisan panel, is we would like the panel to have a public hearing before they actually start drawing the lines for the new maps, because people in their neighborhoods know their neighborhoods the best, and they might very well give information to the panel that the particular people on the panel wouldn't know. The last panel 10 years ago and the panel 20 years ago did have public hearings that were not well attended, by the way.
They sometimes rarely are.
There's value in having that first hearing for the panel before they start drawing the lines.
Speaking of having people on the ground chime in on these things, I've neglected to invite listeners to join this conversation. Please feel free to give us a call at 263-WXXI, that's 263-9994, or by calling 844-295-TALK, that's 844-295-8255, or you can always email the program at connections@WXXI.org. We have an email from Vicky who asks, what would be wrong with all the districts, local, county, state, and federal, being drawn based first on actual community lines, like village, town, city, county? But the only deviation allowed would be lines as straight as geometric, the lines being as straight and geometric as possible. Is the difficulty with that, like keeping a district to a town or a village?
The
issue is population.
One?
Sure, right?
Sure. Yeah, I would love to take that one. And I want to put it in the context of the state. So right now, when we redistrict for the state Senate and the assembly lines, the towns have to be kept intact, but the cities can be carved up. And what that resulted in is probably the biggest example of gerrymandering and a consequence for our community in recent memory. And that is the fact that the city of Rochester is represented by three Republican state senators. This is a city of 200,000 people that is 6-to-1 Democratic enrollment. And yet we have three Republican state senators, one of whom is from suburban Buffalo, who represents the 19th ward. If that doesn't explain to your listeners what gerrymandering is and the impact that it has, you know, Joe Roebuck didn't want the 19th ward in his district when the Republicans controlled drawing those lines in the early 2000s, and the GOP controlled the state Senate. So these guys drew their own lines, and it carved up the city of Rochester. So to the Vicky's point, towns for the state lines are not allowed to be carved up, but they are for the city. And that has led to injustice, in my opinion. Now, in terms of the county, we don't have any such rule as that. You can look at villages in the county that have been split by county legislative districts. I think the village of Brockport, East Rochester, and those are the kinds of things that I think will come up for discussion next year when the data comes in.
Are there any city districts go ahead. Sorry, Legislator Felder.
Well, Rachel mentioned Brockport. Now, I went to college in Brockport. If you go down Main Street in Brockport, the village of Brockport, on one side of the street, you're in one legislative district. You cross the street, you're in another legislative district. It's the same village. And there's only about 8,500 people in the village of Brockport.
Right, and interest
those are the kinds of things that I've been talking about. How do you clean up some of that stuff? It just doesn't make sense.
Right, the interests of one side of the street doesn't vary very much from the other side of the street.
No, I mean, we talk about even the commercial businesses district. We're not, you know, Brockport. If you've ever been to Brockport, you know, Brockport business district isn't that long. It goes basically from the canal, maybe to the railroad tracks over there by, what street is that? Adams Street. So it's really not that big. So, you know, that's, to me, that never looked like me when I saw it. But on the flip side, you know, when 10 years ago in the state assembly, when the 137s were being created, because it was 133rd, but they had to change the numbers for whatever reason. They've tried to take the 137 all the way up to the Lake and Charlotte, and that was independent people, and that's just too far out of the. There's no commonality, except for maybe those two housing projects you have up there in Charlotte with people down here around Upper Falls Boulevard, Clinton Avenue, Hudson Avenue, where I am, and so it doesn't make, you know, those kind of things don't make sense. But somebody just looking clinically saying, okay, let's draw this line. They don't. They haven't looked really into does this make sense? Does it fit? And those are the kind of things that I worry about when people are looking at the lines and not really looking at the community.
So let's talk about representation in the county legislature right now. There are 15 Republicans, 14 Democrats, 29 seats total. What a lot of people don't know, when it seems like whenever I report it, I hear back from readers who seem flabbergasted at this, but that registered Democrats far outnumber Republicans in Monroe County. There are, I just looked this up before we started the show here, and I'm going to speak in rough numbers here. There are roughly 468,000 registered voters in Monroe County. 42% of them, 198,000, are registered Democrats. 27% are registered Republicans. So how does it work out that Republicans hold a majority in the county legislature? Anyone want to take that?
Well, you can look at gerrymandering as a possible reason, and definitely part of the problem. But I also think you have a situation where in a lot of the, particularly the eastern suburbs, the Democratic Party committees in those areas were not very well organized in the past. If you look at now, you see Pittsford is a lot stronger committee, Parent is a lot stronger committee, Pinville is a lot stronger committee, and they started making inroads out there. The mayor, you know, you got the mayor of Fairport, right. You got the Pittsford Town Board. So you start seeing you're seeing the progress being made. And even in last year's election, even though Republicans held the majority, you had the election out in the Tarrant with Josh Faldair that was very close against Sean Delahanty. You had the race in Pinfield was relatively close, and the race in Minden where Carla Boyce was relatively close. So you, what you're seeing, you see, even with the lines we have now, you're seeing Democrats getting stronger, in particularly in the eastern suburbs. And so you're starting to see that demographically, and people are getting used to actually going out working to get voters and getting voters to vote Democratic. It actually is making a difference. So you're seeing now that even with the lines we have now, it's only 15-14, and it could have very easily been 15-14 the other way.
Legislator Barnhart, did you want to say something? I thought I heard you chime in.
Yeah, I think that's a really good take. I would also add on the organizational piece of Democrats. I mean, we've seen turnout increase dramatically among Democratic voters as well as registration. Thank you, President Trump. I mean, that is a direct result. If Biden wins in November, I expect the pendulum to swing a little bit back the other direction. But it's pretty clear that this county is getting more blue. And certainly when you see disproportionate representation, I wouldn't call this extreme disproportionate representation, honestly, for the reasons that Vince outlined. But when you start to see real disproportionate representation in terms of party, you do start to look at the maps and say, okay, what's really going on? I think, as I said, I wouldn't call it extreme at this point because of the historical trends, but, you know, we'll have to see what maps we can come up with next year.
Well, so in 2011, Catherine, let's bring it back to you. League of Women Voters conducts this study with the Center for Governmental Research. It redraws the lines, and it finds that when all is said and done, doing it as independently and as blindly as possible, the Republicans still had a 16-13 majority. Do I have that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I want to read some of the conclusion from that report really quickly. Independent, nonpartisan redistricting is presented as a solution. CGR, that's Center for Governmental Research, experiment drawing politically blind maps did not seem necessarily to create districts favoring Republicans, despite an overall Democratic enrollment advantage in the county. Instead, the geographic distribution of voters across the county, with Democrat-leaning voters concentrated in the city and Republican-leaning voters dispersed over a larger area, worked together to facilitate the creation of Republican-leaning districts. And it says, and this is what I want to touch on, given these findings, additional questions could be raised about whether geographically based districts are the best way to select representatives and whether the addition of at-large seats to the county legislature should be considered. Do you still stand by that, Catherine? Is that something that you'd like to see or at least like to see discussed, at-large seats? And tell us a little bit about the difference between the two.
Okay. What we would be doing this year, our study for this year, would be examining that as one issue. Traditionally, the district representing city and districts representing towns. But that doesn't mean that the map couldn't be drawn in a way that had a legislative district with city and town residents. So those are all the kinds of things that we would be studying before we would take a position on the process for the new map.
David,
those would be big questions, as some other big questions have been asked about our county legislature. I mean, when we looked at it in 2001, before we hired the Center for Government Research, there are big issues like people were still, elected officials were still talking about having a board of supervisors instead of having a county legislature.
Mm. Legislator Barnhart?
Yeah, I am deeply opposed to at-large seats, and let me tell you why. I actually have a white paper that I've been kicking around for a couple of years now about the at-large seats in the city, which, you know, I think we're only one of 15% of cities in the country that have majority at-large seats. The problem with
you're talking about the city council.
That's right.
Yeah.
The problem with at-large seats is, and we're the only one in New York State that has majority at-large seats of the Big Five. The reason they're problematic is you really want demographic and geographic representation, and you also limit the power of machine politics. You know, to win a countywide seat or a citywide seat requires a lot of resources, and it's very difficult for grassroots to get in there. So I'm opposed to at-large seats. I would love to see all district seats for the city. Would love to petition a referendum. That's on my dream wish list and conversation for another day. But that I really worry if we go at-large seats for the county. What would that look like? I mean, in the city, for example, we only have one representative who lives in the Northeast, and so you really start to have problems. So anyway, I love the idea, and I can't wait to see the League of Women Voters. I love the idea of studying it, and I can't wait to see what they come up with. And I think it's always good to talk about reforms and ways that we can make things better.
I want to take a call from John from Rochester. John, you're on the line. Thanks for listening.
Hi, thanks. My question is for legislators that are on your show, and it has to do with what would it take for the Democrats on the county legislature to sufficiently align, that is, work together to provide equitable representation during redistricting.
Okay, we'll take that off the air. Thank you so much, John, for the call. Legislator Felder, do you want to take that?
Well, I think it goes down to having a discussion about what's the best path forward. Now we look at it. But it has to be a discussion. We haven't really discussed it yet. We had a proposal that came from the county executive, and that's it. And I said I had a proposal that I gave to my caucus that came from Steve Brew, at least as a brainstorm, and it's because it's not a referral, but as a kickstart of the conversation. And so we need to sit down and have a discussion on what we think is the best path forward, and how we try to work with the Republicans to get them to agree to a fair process.
So minority,
the day, they had 15 votes.
Minority Leader Felder,
you know, when you have the majority leader declaring it dead on arrival, you know.
Minority Leader Felder, you brought up Legislator Brew's referral earlier today, and I do want to touch on it here because it differs from the county executive's proposal. So the county executive's proposal, as we talked about, would establish this 8-person body that would examine the census data and redraw the lines. Legislator Brew, who's the majority leader in the county legislature, put forth recently legislation to change the terms of office.
No legislation. Excuse me, David.
Sorry.
No legislation has been put forward. That was simply a proposal he gave to me for us to discuss in the caucus.
Okay.
No legislation.
All right. I'm sorry. So I have seen that legislation. It hasn't been introduced yet. Do you want to tell us about that? What that would do, my understanding of it, is that right now legislators are elected on a sort of 4-year term, 4-year term, and 2-year term basis. And this goes back to 2011.
We're on a 4-2-4 cycle.
4-2-4, okay. 4-2-4 cycle. So legislators are up for re-election again in 2021. The problem with the census this year is it doesn't align, as you alluded to earlier, it doesn't align with the political calendar. The political calendar used to be such that you could begin your petitioning back in – potential candidates could begin their petitioning to get on the ballot in June. Now that petitioning has to take place in February, and ultimately it the census data won't come in until after February. So the problem then becomes – legislators would be elected on these lines, in these boundaries in 2021, and then serve out another 4-year term. So the county executive is suggesting that they have served just a 1-year term and then be up for re-election again in 2022. Majority Leader Brew is suggesting that it be a 2-year term. In which they would be reelected again in 2023 or up for reelection again in 2023. Do I have that right?
Well, I think the county executive went further and said that I think I haven't read it last week, but basically from then on, elections will be in even years.
That's under the county executive's proposal. They would be in even years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would that serve Democrats well? Who does that benefit, if anyone?
I'm sure in a quadrennial election, it'll probably benefit the Democrats because turnout is higher, and a lot of our voters are programmed to vote in our presidential election, and not so much in others. That's one of the problems across the country with Democrats being able to keep control of the House of Representatives.
Legislator Barnhart?
I have a couple questions about this that I'm really eager to hear from the administration about, as well as the Republicans. Number one, I think it makes sense to wait until 2023 to run again. You know, I think we're going to have to run on our current lines next year. And I think that if we, you know, assuming you win, the idea of running three times in 4 years is it's not fun. OK, so from purely selfish speaking, that it's running for office is a lot of work, and it's very distracting, and it requires raising a lot of money. And I'm sure voters will be very happy to see me knocking on their doors again. But here's the thing. I don't know legally if we can wait until 2023. I would hope that the Republicans, when they introduce that proposal, you know, check that out. I don't know it. And the reason I'm asking that is because of the one person, one vote doctrine. So when the census numbers come back in late 2021, my concern is if there are districts that are really out of whack in terms of population distribution, does that automatically illegal? Would someone be able to take us to court and force us to run in 2022? Listen, this has happened before. I think it happened in the early 90s. I could be wrong. Someone should look it up, but I hear your music going. Anyway, that's my question.
I think you're exactly right. That did happen in the early 90s. And there are still lots of questions to be asked and answered on this topic. I'm sure that your regular host, Evan Dawson, will tackle that at some point in the future. I want to thank my guests for a great debate and their time today. Minority Leader Vincent Felder, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Legislator Rachel Barnhart, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. I appreciate you being here.
Thanks.
And Catherine Smith, past president of the League of Women Voters in the Rochester metropolitan area, adding much needed historical perspective to this. Thank you for the work that you do, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having the League.
Take care.